Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Look out, it's only films to be buried with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, an owl ring, and I love films. As Mark Frost once said, a real mystery can't be solved, not completely. It's always just out of reach, like a light around the corner. You might catch a glimpse of what it reveals, feel its warmth, but you can't know the heart of it. Not really. That's what gives it value. It can't be cracked. It's bigger than you and me, bigger than everything we know. I will never fully understand what Holy Motors is really about, but I don't really want to for fear of losing its magic on me. It's absolutely right, Mark Frost. Every week I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Mark Frost, Sharon Stone, and even Cled Blambles. But this week, it's the brilliant actor, winemaker, and now podcaster and all-time legend, Mr. Kyle MacLachlan. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get an extra 25 minutes with Kyle, where we talk secrets of Twin Peaks The Return. We talk about beginnings and endings. You get the whole episode uncut and ad-free and as a video. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein with all the other episodes. So this is a huge one for me. Kyle MacLachlan is one of my favourite actors. He has been legendary in so many things, from Blue Velvet to Dune to Desperate Housewives to Sex and the City to The Hidden, but most influential of all, he plays Special Agent Dale Cooper in Twin Peaks and Twin Peaks The Return. Those of you who know me will know what a huge part of my brain is taken up with Twin Peaks. I'd say my brain is 50% Twin Peaks and 50% sort of trying to function with the rest of my day. I love Twin Peaks so fucking much. I saw it far too young. It forever warped my brain. And so to have the main star and constant David Lynch muse on the show was almost too much for me. And I think you can hear that in the episode. I'm very overexcited and trying not to say I love you every 10 minutes. But, you know, it's very clear what's really going on. You can hear it. I'm really grateful to Kyle for doing the show and for being so patient and indulgent with all my Twin Peaks thoughts and questions. If you haven't seen Twin Peaks and Twin Peaks The Return, you've got to watch them, and you should probably watch them before you listen to this episode because we go in deep on all of it. He also is a winemaker. You can buy his wine, Pursued by a Bear. And also, he has a new podcast himself coming out. It's come out this week. It starts this week. It's called Varnum Town. It's a true crime podcast. You should subscribe and listen and love it. I think it's 10 episodes, and so far, it is fucking brilliant. Anyway, I just got to say, having had co-creator of Twin Peaks, Mark Frost, on the show a couple of years ago, and now Kyle, I've now got to meet two of my all-time heroes, and turns out they're fucking wonderful people. So meet your heroes, I guess. That's the moral of the story. Anyway, we recorded this on Zoom recently. I really think you're going to love it. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 284 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is I, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by an actor, a winemaker, a podcaster, a legend, a hero, a Twin Peakser, a Blue Velveter, a Juner, a Sex in the City, a Desperate Housewives-er, a Showgirls-er, a Twin Peaks The Returner, a everything you've ever loved. He's in it. He changed all of your lives. Can you believe he's here? I can't. He's one of the greats, one of the all-time heroes of all time. Can you believe he's here? He really is. It's him. Please welcome to the show, the brilliant, it's Kyle MacLachlan.
And the crowd goes wild. I am laughing my ass off. That was perhaps the best introduction I have ever received, Brett. Thank you so much.
Thank you so
very
much.
Very kind. Very kind. Wow.
Kyle, it is so wonderful to see you. I'm going to have to bore you by telling the people listening at home, who, if anyone has ever followed this podcast, they know that Twin Peaks is as big a thing in my life as The Muppets. Like, I'd say that if you define me as two things, yes, culture-wise, it's The Muppets and Twin Peaks.
That's perfect.
And when I was eight, I came home, me and my sister came home from something, and my dad, we went to say hello to my dad, and he was watching the very first episode of Twin Peaks. It was like 2 minutes in, and we went to say hello, and he went, shush, shush, shush. And we sat down, and we watched it. And we were so fucking scared and we were so addicted. And then we watched the whole thing. Oh. And I think it's why we're the way we are. And God bless you. And thank you.
I'm so happy to hear that. It's a show. It had such an impact back in the day. And I hear these stories. This is your beautiful story from people. And it's just a great reminder of the power of David Lynch, you know, and that story in particular. So
I had Mark Frost on the show. Oh, by the way, I'm going to tell people, if you don't mind, you've also been incredibly lovely to me. I met you at a event and we said hello and we vaguely stayed in touch. And then you were in London on my birthday and you and your lovely wife invited me for a coffee. And I came and had a coffee and it was literally like a Make-A-Wish Foundation because I just sat for an hour and a half and asked you questions about David Lynch and Twin Peaks, and you were so generous and you bought me an ice cream. What a day.
Yes,
what a
day. That's a birthday that you'll remember. You know, you got to celebrate on your birthday. Well, I thank you. You know, I am a huge fan of yours as well. And so it was a mutual love fest that we had over an ice cream sundae of some kind. It was a lovely, lovely, lovely day. Thank you.
But if you will forgive me, because no one else was listening, and I felt as we were having that conversation, I was like, this is so unfair that I'm getting to have this all to myself. So I would like to repeat a couple of those questions so that people can enjoy them, which is like, I'm so obsessed with Twin Peaks and I'm more, even kind of more obsessed with The Return, because it's so unusual for something to come back 25 years later and be fucking amazing and profound and like as mind-blowing as the original, if not more so. And like, I don't think there is a single example of something that's done that. I think most things that come back have been kind of disappointing. And my theory is when things come back and people really want them to come back and then they feel dissatisfying, is kind of because they kind of are the same thing. And it's almost like they've gone, well, we'll give you what you want. And then you get what you want and you're like, oh no, I didn't really want that. I wanted, and with Twin Peaks, the original was such a surprise that what happened with The Return, it was like, oh, we'll surprise you. Like, this is not at all what you think it's going to be, which is what the original Twin Peaks was.
Yeah.
It's fucking amazing. How was it for you?
Well, I think you make a good point about things that come back again. And I feel like what happens is they get watered down somehow and they lose their intensity. And I know that there were a lot of Twin Peaks fans who wanted to kind of have that warm bath going back and recreating that experience, which you simply can't. And I know that David Lynch in particular has no interest in recreating something that's already been done. And he was all about the future and moving forward. And, you know, we were able to really get what I call is the pure Lynch injection. Yeah, you know, he obviously, David is a, you know, you put him under the category of surreal as filmmaker, I think. And I think what we got for that return was really almost just the purity of his vision, of his intensity. And honestly, it wasn't for everyone, but I am really proud of it. And I'm so happy to hear that you also embraced it that way, because it's what it is, Twin Peaks. And then it's even, I think, more. And if you like the original and you were a fan of the original, I think you really, it was something that really spoke to you. So thank you.
It also feels like, you know, there's the reality, and forgive me if this is, I don't know, too sad to talk about, but, you know, lots of people kind of died from the cast, like within weeks, within days of the show. And it really feels like this kind of like time. The whole thing is about time. And there's the kind of reality of these people getting older and some of them dying. And you feel there's a real, it's so strong within the show, particularly with the log lady and everything. It's like, it's so fucking moving. This feels like this art object about time, real fucking time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I think so often when you see something, a film, a favorite film or a favorite program, it's a frozen moment in time, right? And time stops. And that's how you remember that moment. And with Twin Peaks, you know, obviously we had advanced 25 or a few more years, and you saw the age and you realized that people were gone. And suddenly, as you said, time becomes very real, and the march of time becomes like really very tangible, I think. And it was a byproduct of the experience, but I think a powerful one.
Yeah. And can I, you're incredible in The Return, and you essentially play three, if not arguably four parts.
Yeah.
Five? I'd say four. I think you're playing four parts.
With a few other little variations thrown in. Yeah, there were.
I think the guy at the end in the final episode is a fourth.
Yeah, Richard, referred to as Richard. Yeah. He's a slight cut of Cooper, close to Cooper, but not exactly.
Yeah, and it's a phenomenal performance, and you should have won all the awards for it. And and the thing that you're so lovely at, and you're kind of twinkly, and there's an innocence about you and a purity and a curiosity and all that stuff. But when you played Mr. C, you're dead. You are scared, proper fucking scary. And I believe that's the first time you've done something that dark yourself. And I wondered how that was and how you did it. You're so...
I wondered how I did. When I was reading the script, I recognized the fact that what I needed to do, and it was soul searching. I said, are you an actor who can do this? You know, can you go and do what's necessary? Because if you can't, the show doesn't work.
Yeah.
So, but I had the little glimmer of hope was that the David was there as the director. And I said, if I'm going to do this, there's nobody I'd rather, you know, jump off the edge of this cliff with than with David. And I know that he'll have my back. And it was a challenging, scary, surprisingly powerful. Not surprising that it was powerful, but the fact that I would actually, the feelings, you know, as an actor, it's a journey, and every role demands different things, and you're sourcing from different parts of yourself. And I was like, this is a part that I'd never sourced. And yet I dipped into it and it was available to me. And I was like, okay, that dark, inky black pool is there. And I kind of wallowed in it a bit, I got to say. I was very happy to take it off at the end of the day, which was sort of symbolic by removing, basically getting undressed for me, taking off the character. But I was very surprised that when I got in it, it was different. And it was exciting and powerful and a little frightening.
Wow. That's really interesting. You were like, oh, I could kill people. I could kill people.
It's a very weird place to be as an actor, and one that I did not want to stay in very long, to be honest.
Yeah. There's a reality. I think about that a lot. Like, that, you know, there's the scene you have quite early on. I think it's like episode three, I say, as a mega, mega fan, where you hit that woman and it's very horrible and upsetting. And I I think about scenes like that, the sort of reality of it. Obviously, you're not hitting her, but you have to physically look like you're going to and look like you mean it. That's sort of very dark, scary. I'd always, that must be very tricky.
You know, there was a hint of it in Blue Velvet in the relationship with Isabella, in that as the character of Jeffrey sort of brushes up against his dark side, encouraged by her and her behavior, and obviously influenced by the character of Frank Booth, played by Dennis Hopper, played beautifully by Dennis Hopper. And he does strike her in this moment of sort of passion, anger, desperation, sexual fervor, everything. And the remorse that he exhibits after that, when he's sitting in his room and he's driven to tears, is really just a glimmer of what was to come, and not even related, and other than the fact that it was directed by David in The Return, from Blue Velvet to The Return, that character had that. And I hadn't really thought about that until you just mentioned that. And it was there, but more fully realized, of course, in The Return.
Yeah. There's a clip I urge anyone to find online where it's just a 1 minute, like, behind the scenes shot of The Return, Twin Peaks The Return. And it's, you can hear, you're in the red room, you're walking along the floor, and David is just shouting directions from behind the camera, and he's going, look down, the floor is shaking, the floor is falling, you're falling down, you're falling, you're up, you're down. And he's shouting, and it looks like you do it all in one take. It's so fucking brilliant. And the thing that is really fascinating about it is that it's the sort of thing that if you weren't completely trusting and 100% committed, it would be embarrassing. Like, it's right on the edge of, this could feel very silly. Like, it could be feel silly. He's going like, you're dancing, you're falling.
Yeah.
And it's so the very edge of that. And yet it's, you're amazing. Like, it isn't remotely, it's not silly. It's not funny. It could be. There's a version where this is a disaster. You know what I mean? But you're so, both of you are so committed, and it's just, and it ends and everyone claps and you're like, yeah, this is fucking amazing. And
I love it.
I wonder if, can you articulate, or is it just natural, like how you and David, having worked together forever, like what is it? How is it with between the two of you? Is it just trust? Is it?
Yeah.
Do you know what he's doing?
It's a lot of trust. I don't always know what he's doing. You know, I've been famously quoted as not understanding certain things. You know, I know where we are in that moment of the journey. I'm uncertain as to the final result. You know, this is in David's mind. This is the creative, and I am part of the troupe, you know, the group that carries on. But we've always had that talking back and forth is something I remember we did in we started with it in Dune, and it continued into Blue Velvet, more so in Blue Velvet. And it's an interesting connection, because there's a lot of it is sometimes it dips into the what I think is sort of the crazy. So David will say something to me that I know he's just trying to get me to laugh. You know, it's a departure from the scene, but I'll stay in character and I'll do it. And then the goal is to make him laugh. So it's about who makes the other laugh first. Because in Dune and in Blue Velvet, he was right. He'd always be right near the camera. So he wasn't back at a monitor. Now it's different, but he would be right near the camera. And so he was right there, you know, as close as you can be. And so he would just say these things. And oftentimes it was just between the two of us. And then the crew didn't know what was going on. And then, of course, one of us would break out laughing and everyone would laugh. But so we have a lot of fun in some of the darkness, which is
great.
Important.
Yeah. And also I imagine, I love that Laura Dern is in it, and you two equally seem to have had a history with David Lynch for years and years. And may I ask this question? Do you think it's a happy ending?
In The Return?
Yeah. Do you think it's a positive or a negative ending?
It's a mixed ending, I think, because on one hand, I feel like he has succeeded in finding her and actually kind of rescuing her or bringing her from her situation. Obviously, a very bad situation in that room when he finds her. And what's this tableau that is set up there? Not unlike the tableau towards the end of Blue Velvet. similar.
Yeah.
But I also feel like has not finished. And there's a moment of, which you never see Cooper in a moment of, or rarely, I guess, in a moment of not sure what to do. And yet, you know, I think he'll figure it out. But so I feel like it's almost a work in progress kind of. And he hasn't quite figured out how he's going to get back all the way. I used to liken it kind of like an astronaut would be tethered and then he has to let go and then he's going to catch something else, but he hasn't quite caught the next thing yet. So he's in limbo a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's a mix. And I think the look on his face, and that was all directed, you know, we shot the very, very end outside the Palmer House very early in the filming. It was during the Seattle sequence, which we shot first. So I hadn't really gone on the journey yet.
Oh, wow.
So I relied heavily on David to say, okay, he said, come down the steps. You walk into the street. You take this number of steps. You stop. You hold a beat. You turn. Everything that you see, the physicality was him setting up the exact relationship that he wanted. Because I didn't understand exactly where we were on the journey.
Mm.
And then he had, of course, Charlize do that scream, which just, I mean, I don't know if you had the same reaction at the end of the pilot. There's Grace sits up and there's a scream and then the hand comes in. And I remember the hair on the back of my neck just went, I got chills. And that never happens. I mean, when are you so impacted by something? Rarely, right? And I remember I had exactly the same reaction in the flesh, in person when that happened. I was just like, oh my God. And I said, this is how we're going to leave the audience. Oh, my God. All right.
My God. You know what? I could cry because I've just realized that, it's like the whole full circle of life is that is what happened in the pilot when me and my sister were young and we saw that. And when that happened, both of us sort of went, And the funny thing is, I was supposed to move out. Me and my sister shared a room and I was supposed to have, that day, I was supposed to have my own room. And we were so scared that I dragged my mattress into my sister's room. And to this day, I still sleep there. but that feeling, you know, 26 years later, that is exactly how I responded to the end of this.
Oh, God, it's just very powerful. That's a very funny story. You'll never forget. Oh, God.
But it also makes me think, like, you're very funny. I think it's interesting. And maybe you've always been this way, and maybe it's inherent to you. I think you're like in Sex and the City. I love you in Sex and the City. And it's such it's so committed, such a committed, funny performance. And I don't know, that must just be, you must just be very open to everything. Because again, that could be silly, it could be embarrassing, but you fucking, it's so good. It's so great. a great character.
Thank you.
Do it so well.
Thank you. That was a lot. You know, when you're working with Frances Sternhagen, the late Frances Sternhagen, my mom, I mean, she would come to set, she'd be like in her Birkenstocks and like a gardening shirt, you know, pants, just all natural, hair down, no makeup, you know, and big smile. It's so gracious, so warm. And she would transform into this Upper East Side, chilly, smoking, you know, character. And it's really amazing. And we have just great chemistry. And I had great chemistry with Kristen too, as Charlotte. And I think the idea was, you know, obviously the topics, the things that Trey is dealing with are embarrassing and certain, and you know, you can make a joke about them. But we really tried to find, not all the time, but we tried to find some of the real issues, you know, the real emotion. Like if this really happens, how do two people deal with it? And, you know, and what kind of, just the realness of it we were trying to get to. And I think, and we were helped in some ways. And then also the writers couldn't, you know, resist all the fun, which was great. You know, there was some humor there too, but
it is moving. There is parts of that story that are moving. You're right.
You know,
you're very good.
Try to focus on that.
Okay, one last question. Thank you for indulging me in all of this.
Of course.
With your long career with David Lynch, have you ever been like, I'm not doing that? That's crazy.
You know, there was one time that I remember, and maybe there were others, but I don't think so. I mean, there was the script for Blue Velvet was pretty graphic, as you can imagine, you know, very specific things that happened between Jeffrey and Dorothy and written out, you know. And so there was this kind of a scene where I'm supposed to run from the couch, you know, gather my clothes real quickly. But I knew there was going to be a stretch of the living room where I was going to be potentially full frontal. And I was like, oh boy, David, I was like, I don't know if I can do this. I really, and he said, no, it's okay. We're going to move the camera over here. It's going to be okay. You're going to be fine. And so I trusted him, you know, and I did it, and it actually worked okay. There's a slight moment of something, you know, but it could have been a lot worse. so that was one time when I was, and then the only other was, I remember when we were doing the scene when, after Jeffrey has the joyride, the whole experience, Dean Stockwell and Frank and all that, that night he wakes up kind of beaten up in the lumber yard. And I remember David had wanted Jeffrey to wake up, you know, his pants were down, he was fully, you know, exposed. You could realize he'd been abused. And I was like, I said, David, I think this might be a little more than what the audience should see. I just feel like it might be a little bit too. And he said, okay. We were able to portray that or do that without having to see that, the brutality of that. And so that was, I mean, that was the only time I kind of raised, I didn't sort of say I wasn't going to do it. I just sort of said, I yielded to him, but I said, this is how I kind of feel about this. And he agreed. So
I think that is very smart and a wise move. That's good. Oh man.
Makes sense.
So tell me before I haven't even told you something I should have told you earlier. But
oh no.
Hang on. There are two things you need to tell me about. One is wine and the other is you have a new podcast. What is your podcast? And thank God.
Thank you for about asking. Time. About time. Finally, I'm the last actor to get into the podcast world.
That doesn't have a podcast. It was about time.
I thank you for asking. I have, it's a kind of a crazy mystery story that takes place not far from where we filmed Blue Velvet, which was in Wilmington, North Carolina. This takes place in a little town called Varnamtown, North Carolina. And it's the story of a very eccentric, charismatic guy who made a deal with Pablo Escobar and his cartel and his town. This is a very small town of 300 people, to operate as basically a port or a hub for smuggling drugs into the country from South America. And the podcast is called Varnamtown, after the community. And I heard the story and I said, that is the crazy thing about it is, how, you know, I understand the person, but how do you get a whole town involved? And then what does that mean to the town and to the people and what happens to them, you know, and who agrees and who doesn't agree? And then what does that set up? And I thought, this is a very interesting story. So I contacted my friend Joshua Davis, who's an investigative reporter, and we put together a little crew, very small crew, and we went to Varnamtown and we interviewed almost all of the people that were involved. There's a few that were not around.
Wow.
Pablo Escobar being one, but we did interview everybody.
Good game.
Yeah, and we came up, and this little 8-episode sort of mystery that we go on to try to kind of figure this out, put the pieces together. And I loved it. I loved the process. It's really fun.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Does it make you want to do more of them?
That's cool. I understand it more now. The big learning curve for me was you go in with an idea of a story, and then that story continues to evolve and change and shift as we do these interviews, as we went on this journey and gathered everything. And I said, oh, okay. So it's the story sort of reveals itself as you go through this process. At least that was the experience I had. And I said, that's interesting. Mm. It reveals itself. And I thought, oh, yeah. Okay. I enjoy that. So yeah, I'd like to do more.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Kyle, I did forget to tell you something, which is, it's mad that I didn't tell you at the beginning of this, because, you know, we had a long time dealing with the tech. I should have told you, but let me just check my notes, because I did make a note to tell you. I was going to say it up top, and I don't know, I got distracted because this is exciting to see. You've died. You're dead.
Okay.
You're dead.
Is there a chance of resurrection, or is this it?
No, there is a chance, actually. If this goes well and you ever want to do another episode, then yeah, there's a resurrection episode.
Lovely. Let's make that happen.
How did you die?
Oh, it was a tragic accident.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I was...
What happened?
I was on a podcast with Brett Goldstein. I don't know if you know
him. Oh, no.
Yeah, it was sad.
Yeah.
And I was trying to work the AV, and I was actually electrocuted trying to hook up the microphone. And it was sad. No. Yeah. So there's a lot of it. My final.
Killed by a Yeti.
Yeah. My final moments were actually caught on tape and recorded. So very embarrassing.
But they made for great content.
yes.
What do you worry about death, Kyle McLaughlin?
It will occasionally cross my mind. I'm one of those people, I don't know if you're like this, but if I wake up at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, from sleep, mm-hmm. My mind begins, it's a dark time, I think. They do say it is the nadir?
The
lowest point, yeah. In fact, when people pass, if they're suffering, and it's a common time to actually pass, really? Like four in the morning, roughly. And occasionally, yeah, that concept will creep in and it becomes... I have to work hard to shake it. Not hard, but I need to shake it off, and I enter into my gratitude list of things, you know, my family, my son, and my things I've done, people I know, those kind of things. It's very hard to imagine just not being here. It's a concept that I think is, if you really sit with it, it's not a place that I really like to go and be.
Do you think there's more when you die, that there's something else?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. You know, one side of my brain says, and you know, this is it, and you've lived, and you move on, and you live on in the memories of others, you know. And in some ways, as an actor, if you know, you can live on for possibly a long time. But, you know, that's one side. The other side is hopeful that there is some kind of energy transference, that some kind of consciousness, although really hard to believe that for me.
Well, I got news for you. There is a heaven. And guess who's going? You are.
I am.
You get a heaven.
Knew it.
You get a heaven.
I knew it. This is why I'm doing
You're going
the
to heaven.
I'm going to heaven.
And it's filled with your favorite thing. What's your favorite thing?
I hope I can bring wine.
Yeah. No. Tell me, you love wine. You make wine. Why? Tell me. What happened?
I don't know what happened.
Why the wine?
I've liked wine longer than I should be. I like wine since high school.
Really?
Yes.
You're very sophisticated.
Well, it wasn't really good wine that I liked, but I love the idea of it. And that started me on this journey that's led now to me owning a brand, a wine brand. And I make wine in my home state of Washington, where I grew up on the east side. Eastern Washington is quite dry, quite good for wine grapes, in fact. The west side, not so good. That's Seattle, and that's very rainy and green and mossy. But the east side is dry, dry as bone. And so that's where I grew up, and that's where the vineyards that I use for my wine are all that side. So I made my first vintage in 2005 as kind of a fun adventure, wanted to learn about it, wanted my dad to be part of it. And that started me on this journey. And here we are, 2023, I'm 2024, good Lord. And I've got seven different wines, and I'm really still enjoying the journey. So much fun.
Love it. And it's huge, right? You're doing, it's a very big brand now.
that's a known brand. We're still pretty small production, you know, roughly 3,000 case productions, pretty small, but high quality, and that's our focus. And we actually have a distribution in the UK, which is pretty cool. Got a few spots there and around the country. So I've got distribution in about 18 states, and I love it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, in heaven, there's all the wine you could want. There's your wine. There's your other favorite wines. I don't know enough about wines, but they're all there. There's red. There's white.
That's there's all rosé. That matters. I'm sure they're all fantastic. If they're in heaven, they've got to be great.
Yeah. They're really good. All made in dry. You love them. And everyone's very excited to see you. And they want to know about your life. But they want to know about your life through film. And the first thing they ask you, what's the first film you remember seeing, Karl McLaughlin?
I don't know if this was the first film I ever saw, but it's one that had an impact on me that I still think about today. I was in fifth grade. So how is that? That's maybe 10? I don't know. 11? 10? Anyway.
I don't know. I don't know your grade system.
I was a crossing, what you call, we called them patrol boys back then. We was a crossing guard. And this is when it was, the kids were actually the crossing guards for the other kids. And at the end of the year, as a, I guess, as a nice gesture, we got half a day off school and we got to go to this park, all these games and food and everything. And it culminated in going to see a movie at the local theater in downtown Yakima, Washington. And I went to the theater, very excited. I hadn't seen many movies. And I remember sitting down and the screening was a film called Duel at Diablo, Western.
Mm.
Great, you know, it was fine. You're watching cowboys and everything going around. And at a certain point in the film, one of the good guys has been kidnapped by the Native Americans, Indians at that time, Native Americans had kidnapped him and had taken him away. We didn't know where he was. And so they sent out a search party and they find him. And he's been tied to a wagon wheel. None of this you see.
Right.
The only thing you see is kind of from behind an arm that's been lashed to a wagon wheel. And they've been roasting him alive. So the arm is bloody and blistered and grotesque. And you're like, that's all I needed to see. I was like, I was horrified. I was frightened beyond belief. Then, because you see the faces of the other cowhands looking at him like, oh, like incredulous, like, oh my God, this is awful. And I don't know if any dialogue was, but I remember there was a passing of a gun, six shooter, to the hand that had been burned. You know, it was enough. It was okay. And it reached out and with its bloody fingers, grabbed the pistol and began to turn the gun this way. And they cut away. And now you're with the cowboys and they're kind of some distance. They're riding away and you hear a gunshot, a single gunshot ring out.
Oh, God.
And I was like, oh, that was it. I was like, it was embedded in my brain. I was, oh my God, Jesus. I'd never seen anything like this. I'd never seen anything like that. So I must have seen other movies. I must have, because we were pretty sheltered as kids. And so I'm sure there were Disney movies, you know, which have a certain, you know, element of you know, Bambi, you think about, that's a element of loss in there and horror. Yeah. But this was something so brutally graphic to me. And, you know, I still have those few images, and I'm sure they've distorted over the years, but that was the first thing that I ever saw. So that I remember really, really that visceral of a reaction.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Fucking hell. That's intense.
I haven't even never seen it again. So I don't know.
Yeah. I'd like to look that up. What about crying? What is the film that made you cry the most?
I think it's any film that I watch when I'm in the air. Is there a thing? Does this happen to you? That
it does. I think it is a thing, but no one knows why it is a thing. But yeah, everything makes you cry in the air.
It's the strangest thing. And I remember I was flying somewhere, and this was back in the day when you could actually make phone calls from the seat. Remember they had phones for a while that you could actually.
Oh, yeah.
I remember sat phones or whatever they were. So I was flying, and I was watching my dog Skip for some reason. And even thinking about it, I'm getting emotional now. And there's a moment where the dog, he puts his paw up on the bed. He can't jump up on the bed. He's getting old. And I was just like, thank God I was in the window seat, and I was turned to the side, tears just running down my cheeks. I was like this. And I was, I think I was either on the phone or I'd called the, or maybe I called my wife, Desiree, and she said, hello. I said, hello. Like there's some little whimpery voice. And she said, Kyle. And I said, yeah. And she said, are you crying? And I said, mm-hmm. You know, I just couldn't even talk. And she said, I said, I'm watching my dog Skip. And she said, oh my God, call me back later. And so I hung up. But I just remember that moment so clearly. Just, oh, it was, had such, like, you know, you, watching it in your home, you'd be like, oh, that's a very moving moment. But somehow when you're in the air, I don't know what it is. Everything has more impact.
You can't, Fast and Furious will make you cry on a plane. Like, you can't be watching a fucking dog film on a plane. That's mad.
Vin Diesel will make you cry.
Vin Diesel saying, we're a family, will make you cry.
Yeah, plane. Yeah. I believe you. I think you're absolutely right. Yeah, so anyway.
Oh. What about being scared? What's the film that scared you most? Do you like being scared? And by the way, you are the thing that scared me the most.
Okay.
Is my answer.
Nice to have that distinction.
Yeah.
I don't like being scared. I don't like jump scares. But again, I was working in North Carolina. I was working as an apprentice at Flat Rock Playhouse. So this would have been 77, 78. And this film called Alien had come out. And so I was kind of seeing this girl and we went to see Alien together on a rare day off. And I literally sweat through my clothes. My t-shirt is drenched with sweat. It was so tense and I was so scared. My heart was going like 100 miles an hour. I was freaked out. That movie totally, it just scared, basically scared the shit out of me. That was, and I still love it. I love all the aliens. Yeah. I mean, I'm just, but yeah, that one for me was really memorable. It's, and, you know, it was tough.
It holds up, Alien. It's a really good film.
I think so. And I think it does. You know, such a big fan of Sigourney Weaver for all the years of Tom Skerritt and Harry Dean. You know, just the production value of it was interesting because it was early and it was a ship that was like a working ship. This wasn't a pristine spacecraft.
It was dirty. That was new, right?
It was new.
To see, like a dirty ship.
Yeah. You'd seen Star Wars to that point, which is clean and nice and everything is shiny. Yeah. This was, and therefore very real, I thought.
Yeah.
And really put you in that place so quickly. So scary.
Fantastic.
Oh, God.
What is the film that you love, people don't like it. It is not critically acclaimed, but you love it forever.
There's this film. I mean, I don't know if people love this film or not. Love it. I can't even tell. But there were two films that were made actually at the same time. It was sort of controversial. Three Musketeers, Four Musketeers. This is the version with Michael York and Richard Chamberlain. Raquel Welch, Faye Dunaway. I mean, it was a cast of, you know, superstars. Richard Fleischer, I think, directed. And I will watch it today. I mean, I love it. I love it. And part of the reason I think I love it is because I found it when I was in school and training at the University of Washington. And we were, anybody in school, we were 13 kids going through this repertory theater experience, this program for 3 years. And if any kind of diversion, you know, was because it was a very intense program. And I remember going there and watching this and just feeling like, oh my God, this is my kind of humor. This is my kind of movie. It had fun, swashbuckling, great sword play. I think the choreographer is William Hobbs. What? Oliver Reed. I don't know. Just, I love everything about it. I love everything. In fact, I love it so much that I would watch. They have, you know, kind of behind the scenes footage or interviews with the actors, you know, many years after. And I would sit and watch that. And I just love hearing the stories. And I love the idea of being on that set. And I love everything about it. It's crazy.
I love it.
It's so.
That's so nice.
It's like a guilty pleasure.
What about on the other side of it, a film that you used to love a lot, but you've watched recently and you've thought, I don't like this anymore. Maybe you changed.
The thing is, I still like this film, but It's a context. Blazing Saddles. Have you seen that recently?
I love Blazing Saddles. I haven't watched it recently.
I love Blazing Saddles, but it's so inappropriate right now. It's so not what it's supposed to be. It's, you know, it's like of a time and a place, and it's hilarious, but it's hard for me to watch now just because of some of the jokes. And I'm just like, I know everyone's in on the joke, but, and it's got one of the great performances. Gene Wilder is the Waco kid. I mean, Cleavon Little, of course, on, you know, this is Mel Brooks, but I have a hard time watching it just because, but
that is an edgy film. It's an edgy film.
I don't, you know, it's, and again, it holds up. It's just more that it's of a different era, you know, I think, and that really, you know, there are some films that are like, okay, that existed in that time, very specific. And then some films that are sort of a little, you know, you can go with them for decades. So I don't know.
I think that's fair. I think comedy rarely holds up as well. Comedy is always of its time, I think. Not always. But I think any other than sort of silly comedies, silly like slapsticky type things, anything with dialogue usually dates because it's sort of transgressive at the time they make it, and then time moves on, and then that thing suddenly becomes less, I don't know, the times
of the moment, maybe of the moment.
What is the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is any good, but the experience you had around seeing it will always make it special to you.
The, and again, it's because I think of where I was in the context. The film, The Long Good Friday, Bob Hoskins, Helen Mirren.
Great film.
It's a great film.
One of the best endings.
One of the best endings. Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
I was working in at the Shakespeare Festival in Ashland. I had graduated. It was 1982. I was working in Ashland. I was doing Romeo on the main stage, The Boy in Henry V, which is a great role. Octavius Caesar, Julius Caesar, fresh out of school, working, making $500 a month. I was in heaven. It was perfect. Yeah. And it was repertory theater. So you would, you know, occasionally you had a night, you had a dark night, you get a night off. And there was a little theater in town that would play. So, and it was the only movie theater. So we were like, this movie came on The Long Good Friday. I said, I don't know what it is. You know what it is? I don't know what it is. So let's go because we got nothing else to do. We got to kill some time. The main stage is on. We're not on there. Let's go. So we went and we sat down with no expectations. It was my roommate and me. And on comes that music. I don't know if you remember. And you see Bob Hoskins walking. You're like, this is going to be good. I think this is going to be very good. And we were just transported. We were not in Ashland anymore. We were in a different place. We watched it. I can't tell you how many times that week because they only come from a week. Every time that we had downtown, we would go back and watch it. I loved it. I loved that movie. It was so intense. And I remember just because of that experience where I was at the time.
That is very cool.
I love
it. What a film.
It's a great film.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right. They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu.
Thanks, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hello, my neighbour Maureen. What's this I hear about you getting a promotion at the office? Didn't you just get promoted last month? It's all thanks to Canva. I've been nailing every meeting with AI-powered Canva presentations. Isn't that Canva's AI slide generator where you just describe your presentation in a few words and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds? That's right. And to top it off, I use Magic Write, Canva's AI text generator, to perfect my points. Sounds brilliant, Maureen. No more copying and pasting from other programs. No more app switching. Can Canva Docs with Magic Write generate any text you want for work? Yes. Sales proposals, marketing plans? Yeah. Meeting agendas, ratings of all 12 Muppet movies using the extensive point system that I developed at age 12? Anyone can save time with Canva's AI-powered tools. Generate your draft fast with Canva Docs at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbor Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
What about the film you most relate to? What's the film you relate to the most?
You know, I kind of tumble back into the Musketeers again in this, in a sort, I don't know if we can repeat, but it's like, I just saw myself. And I think part of it was because I was in acting training. And so we were doing sword work. You know, we were doing the classics. There was just a lot of, and it's a very actory movie. And I wanted to be a part of that group of people, that, you know, Michael York, Richard Chamberlain, Frank Finlay, Oliver Reed. I wanted to be one of those guys, you know. So, and I felt like this is who I want to be. This is who I would be if I were alive at that time. So I definitely, I think it was a kinship to that kind of brotherhood that I felt with those guys. And I said, this would be my tribe. This would be my family if I were, you know, if that were real and it were of that time.
Yeah.
These would be my people, I feel.
God, it's such a weird life, isn't it? Particularly for an actor where, like, you ended up sort of being found by David Linton and that became such a huge part of your professional life, is this turn that I bet you never could have pictured, or it's such a unique position you're in that I don't think anyone actually can relate to, as in there's nothing comparable, I think, to the way you two have been.
It's an interesting, the journey is, as you said, when you look back, you, in the middle of it, you have no perspective, you know. You're like, okay, I'm doing Dune with David. It happened to be a book that I loved. I started reading when I was 15. Right. I read every year. I would read it. I would write quotes from the movie on my English teacher's blackboard in eighth and ninth grade because she let me. I mean, I was really, really affected by it. And cut to a few years later, I get a phone call. They're auditioning in Seattle, where I happen to be doing a play for Paul. And my first response was, who is this? And why are you prank calling me? And it made no sense to me at all. I couldn't quite fathom what was happening. And that led to everything.
That's everything. What is the sexiest film you've ever seen?
It's not a film, but I watched a clip of Anne Margaret dancing on Johnny Carson to something. And I don't think she was wearing a bra. In fact, I'm pretty sure she was not. And I said, they could do this on television? Back then, I said, she's crazy sexy.
Yeah.
She's crazy sexy.
Have you ever seen Tommy?
Yeah.
The Who musical film?
Yeah.
She rolls around in baked beans in that, I believe. And it's a wonderful piece of cinema.
I just can watch it again and again and again. Spectacular.
I'm afraid I have to ask you this subcategory. Yes. Troubling Boners, Worrying Wydons. A film you found arousing, you weren't sure you should. My apologies.
Well, this is, yes, and you should apologize because it's embarrassing. The Fifth Element.
Yes.
Not Bruce Willis.
You mean, what's he called? Lilo? Is that what
Lilo,
called?
Yeah. Lilo, yeah. She was really good.
She's really good.
I was very impressed with her performance.
She's very good.
Yeah, it's very good. And the costume that she had was great.
Yeah. All of that was very good.
Yeah.
What is objectively the greatest film of all time? Might not be your favorite, but it's the best one.
Best film. There's no doubt in my mind that Cuckoo's Nest is the best
yes.
film. I just yes. think it's a masterpiece. It's not as out there as 2001, let's say. There's something about it. I love everything about it. It's just a great film, and it's very, it takes you on a ride, you know, and I just love it.
Yeah. I think you might be right. It's an excellent answer, and I can't argue with it.
Like, The Shining is great. You know what I mean? That's amazing, yeah. But it's a little, it's not as visceral to me as Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah, and Cuckoo's Nest is about many things. It's very moving. It's funny.
Yeah.
It's upsetting. Good film.
Yeah.
He's fucking, you know what? Milos Forman, he's not on the lists enough. You know what I mean? Of the great directors. He doesn't get mentioned, I don't think, as often. He's brilliant.
You're right. He is brilliant.
So many brilliant films. Why isn't he on the lists? We need to get him on these lists.
He should be on, he should be in the conversation more, right?
For sure.
Yeah.
Like Amadeus? Yes, please.
Yes, without question.
I really love The People vs. Larry Flynn. I think it's...
I agree. A
really interesting film.
I agree. I think brilliant. Woody was amazing in that.
Yeah.
It's a great film.
He's your boy, right? You did a play with him.
We did a play. We were in the West End together at the Comedy Theater on Panton Street. How will I forget? Ever forget?
Yeah.
We did a Pinter there. We did a new play. The theater was known as the Pinter Theater. They had a lot of Pinter there.
Yeah.
We did On an Average Day in the West End, two-hander.
Wow.
You done much theater? I'm trying to think of, I mean, you don't stand up. That's pretty intense.
I used to. Before I did stand up, I did quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I haven't done a play in years and years and years.
I haven't either. It's a lot of work. It's hard.
How long was the run? How long were you doing?
We did, we ran, I think, 3 months or something.
Eesh.
I think we did like 100 some performances. I remember Woody, such a character. We got along great. I really loved him. I still love him. I remember he was saying, he said, I can't do 8 shows a week. I just can't do it. And they were like, what? And he said, no. I'm not going to do 8 shows a week. That's a full performance of this, you know, money that's not going to come in, you know? And he's like, okay. Shit. So they cut back one day and they paid us less as well. So it was like, okay, it's fair enough. But he was happier with that.
So what is the film that you could or have watched the most over and over again? And is it the Musketeers film?
Well, that would be in the list for sure. It's kind of a toss-up between the original Blade Runner, Apocalypse Now.
Yes.
Those two would be right up there. Groundhog Day will always catch me because I just love Bill Murray and I just love that. It's just a fun adventure. But I think Apocalypse or Blade Runner are the two that I've watched probably the most. And, you know, I'm such a fan of of Ridley Scott, first of all, but I just, you know, of the production value of that, you know, the way they made that.
Yeah.
I love early Ridley Scott's. One of my favorite Ridley Scott's movies is The Duelists. Keitel and Keith Carradine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if you say, what movie do you want to watch about France during the time of Napoleon? Do you want to watch Napoleon or do you want to watch The Duelists? And I'll say, I'll watch The Duelists. And I'll probably understand the political climate better. It was, and again, you see, this is theme of going back to this the fact that they fought these duels through the course of the movie with different weapons. And again, I think I must have come up on that movie when I was in school because that was such a big part of our training was all the sword work. And it was so...
Have you ever got to use your sword work?
I did it in a play. I did it in Romeo and Juliet. We did some sword work. And then in Dune, you know, the idea was we didn't have swords necessarily, but we had the short knives, the daggers, and we treated them as if they were swords. So the training was kind of kendo style, you know, with that blade. But no, not. I haven't done anything. There's no, not really a call for swordplay, sadly.
Right, we need to put this out. Anyone listening, you need to hire Carl and give him some sword scenes because this is crazy.
Something where I can use my rusty swordplay skill set.
What is, I don't like to be negative, I don't think you do, but what's the worst film you've ever seen?
Showgirls, without question.
Agree to disagree. I love Showgirls. Listen, not only do I love Showgirls, but the amount of people who come on this podcast who also love Showgirls. Okay. Showgirls is brilliant. Oh. How dare you?
Okay,
sorry. It's brilliant.
I stand corrected.
Can I ask you, did you not, I think Showgirls is great. I loved it. I didn't even love it like later on, ironically, like I loved it when it came out. It was great. Was that a weird experience? Like, did you?
It was a little weird in sort of the day to day filming,
mm-hmm.
because people weren't wearing any clothes when you come to set. And you're like, okay, that's kind of that's not. You don't really see that when that's you work different. That often. I didn't mind it, but it was a little strange. First thing in the morning with your first cup of coffee and everyone's walking around naked. You're like, okay, all right, start the day off with a bang. Okay. But, it was what was created and what the intention was from the beginning to the end were two different things, you know. And
right.
And I get it. And I appreciate the irony of it and the high camp nature of it, which... You know, if you're going to do high camp, I guess going into it with serious intentions is maybe the best. You can't really, you can play camp, but I think if you're like really, really, really serious about it, I think it's even better. So
yeah,
I get the attraction, you know, it's highly quotable,
it's flawless.
Yeah, I just, you know, I know what we were trying to do, or at least what I was trying. Maybe I was in the wrong movie. Maybe I was, I thought it was this, but actually it was always going to be that. I don't know.
May I ask then what you thought, what was it, at the beginning, what did you think it would be that it isn't now?
You know, the intention was to do something really kind of edgy and off-putting, I think, and really not, you know, people with no redeeming qualities, really, you know, and cutthroat and just, and honestly, an attempt on, you know, on my part to change the perception a little bit, you know, as an actor, you sort of end up funneling down a certain channel, I guess. And I said, no, I want to change this. You know, I want to ride down a different river, you know, if I can. And, and that was an attempt. Sadly, a huge failure and an effort.
No,
and did not, you know,
agree,
just made
no, you're wrong. It's brilliant.
wrong, right? You're going to talk me out of it by the end of this episode.
You should be very proud. I love it. People love it. It's brilliant.
Thank you. All right. I'm coming around.
Okay. You're very funny, but what's the film that made you laugh the most?
You know, I'm not a big laugher at films. Like comedy shows, I laugh. Maybe because it's immediate. But I find myself when I watch films that are funny, I'm like, oh, that's funny. You know, I'm like, oh, I love that. That's huge.
Yeah.
You know, like a movie like Holy Grail, and Fawlty Towers. John Cleese is to me he's just genius, and they all are. And I have this strange reaction where instead of laughing, I go, oh, that's brilliant. It's like, oh, I wasn't expecting that. Oh my God, I love that non sequitur. Oh, it's what? You know, but I know it's funny, but I'm kind of watching with a different.
Yeah.
Is that
you watch,
making me
you
sense?
Watch like a Hollywood exec when you're being pitched to. You watch, you just go, that's funny.
Yes.
That's cute. That's funny.
Yes. With that tone. Exactly. That's funny. I love that.
That's funny. Total dead face. That's funny.
I'm terrible in the audience.
That's cute.
Yeah. It's like absolutely dead. but it's weird.
I get it.
I don't know.
So which is your favorite then? Which is the one that's made you go, that's funny, the most?
I think seeing Monty Python, I gotta say, you know, and Holy Grail for me over Life of Brian, I know that that's funny, you know, but something about, I don't know, it's just the whole thing is just brilliant to me, just brilliant. Mm. How they end it, I mean, it's. I don't know, that would be a fun, one would have been a fun troupe to be a part of, can you imagine?
Oh yeah, fuck yeah.
That's good. And you know what else is a really funny movie? And I think I did the same thing in the movies. Arthur, the first Arthur.
Right. Dudley Moore. Interesting.
Oh, yeah. My God. It's a perfect little movie. It's a little gem of a movie. And Arthur 2 is so bad. It's, you know, it's weird. It's like you can't, you talked about earlier about trying to recapture something. It's like the casting was brilliant, unexpectedly brilliant.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. That weirdly came up the other day with Vincent D'Onofrio. He brought up Arthur. Really? It's come up twice at the same time. That's interesting.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu.
Thanks, Maureen.
Hello, my neighbour Maureen. What's this I hear about you getting a promotion at the office? Didn't you just get promoted last month? It's all thanks to Canva. I've been nailing every meeting with AI-powered Canva presentations. Isn't that Canva's AI slide generator where you just describe your presentation in a few words and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds? That's right. And to top it off, I use Magic Write, Canva's AI text generator, to perfect my points. Sounds brilliant, Maureen. No more copying and pasting from other programs. No more app switching. Can Canva Docs with Magic Write generate any text you want for work? Yes. Sales proposals? Marketing plans? Yeah. Meeting agendas? Ratings of all 12 Muppet movies using the extensive point system that I developed at age 12? Anyone can save time with Canva's AI-powered tools. Generate your draft fast with Canva Docs at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbor Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or toxins. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. Symbiotica.com.
Kyle, you've been beyond delightful, beyond wonderful, everything I could hope and more. However, when you came on a podcast with Brett Goldstein and you plugged your microphone in, we were trying to work out the tech, and you got electrocuted and you buzzed to death, killed by Yeti.
Yes.
And I was watching live on the Zoom, and I was like, oh shit. Oh fuck. I was like, have I just killed Kyle McLaughlin? I'm such a, this is awful. So I go round and I see your lovely wife, and I say, I'm sorry, can I just nip into the dining room? I got a coffee with me. And she goes, what's up? And I go, podcast business, don't worry about it. And I come into the back and she says, do you need any help? I go, nah, I got it, don't worry about it. Just you carry on with your business. And I come in and you not any of you burnt like this poor boy in the Diablo film. But you're like stuck to the furniture. So I'm having to like chop up some of the wood that you're attached to. I'm trying to chop you up into pieces. Desiree keeps popping her head in. Everything all right? I go, yeah, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. You carry on. Everything's fine. She goes, what's all that noise? I go, nothing to worry about. Stuff you in the coffin, try to sneak you out the back. Basically, There's more than I was expecting. You're absolutely rammed in that coffin. There's only enough room in that coffin for me to slip one DVD into the side for you to take across to the other side. And in Wine Heaven, it's movie night every night. What film are you taking to show the people of Wine Heaven in heaven when it's your movie night, Karl McLaughlin? And what wine will you pair it with?
Ooh, should I say Sideways?
And pair it with a Merlot.
And pair it with a Merlot just to torture the people in heaven. We could do that.
It's a nice idea.
Could work.
You could have it.
Yeah. All right.
You
could have
it. That's the truth.
I'll take it.
Kyle, you're a bloody wonder, you are. Is there anything you would like to tell people to look out for, to buy wine, to listen to your podcast? What is your podcast called?
It's called Varnamtown. Varnamtown, and it's Podcast One did it, and it's me and Josh Davis. And it's you can find it if you're a podcast listener, you know how to track it down. Okay. 8 episodes. No, they're a half hour. They're not very long.
Oh, great.
Not a huge demand on your time. And I think it's a great story and a great ride. And I think people would enjoy it. So.
And get your wine, Pursued by Bear.
Pursued by Bear, which we have in the UK and around the country. And we have our own little website as well, pursuedbybearwine.com. And you can read the story, and it's a fun little, the website is fun. I set it up to have people have a good time.
And do you have any other TV or film or plays that we're waiting on?
So Fallout for Amazon comes, we drop April 12th, and that's a big one. Again, eight episodes based on the world of the video game Fallout. Mm-hmm. And it's Jonah Nolan and Lisa Joy, creators of Westworld. Yeah.
Oh, great.
And it's a big sci-fi epic that I think is going to be a lot of fun. And they spent a lot of time and money on this. So it's good it's a big thing. It's going to be fun. Going to get some good Ella Fernell, Walton Goggins.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, just on and on. Good group of people. And I'm a, for those of you that know the game, I'm an overseer of Vault 33. And I am Lucy's dad. And that's all they've said I can say.
Okay.
Sad.
Kyle, we are the best. Thank you so much for doing this. Thank you for your patience and for indulging all my Twin Peaks questions. You're so generous to me, and I appreciate you not looking bored by it. So thank you very much.
I was not bored for an instant. Thank you. Thank you. This has been a real pleasure.
Have a wonderful death. Thank you very much. Good day to you, sir. So that was episode 284. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra chat, secrets, and video with Kyle. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, and write about the film that means the most to you and why. It's a lovely thing to read. My neighbour Maureen loves it. It always makes her cry. If you want to come and see me on tour, I'm doing my stand-up show, The Second Best Night of Your Life, across America and now Canada. Just look it up. You'll find the date somewhere. Come along. We'll have a right old time. Thank you so much to everyone for listening. Thank you to Kyle for giving me all that time and for putting up with me. Thank you to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photography. Come and join me next week for another smasher of a guest. I hope you're all well. So that is it for now. In the meantime, have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other. Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor?
Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind. Sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work. Oh, thanks, my name is Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. If tonight's movie night is just what you need, make it special with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.